Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of We Like Your Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo, and before we begin this week's episode of No Borders, No Race, I want to address something that happened last week. Now, as you know, on the previous episode of No Borders, No Race, I had one of the people from Bloomy Light Studio come on the show to help promote a game that they were working on called Lin in the Spirits of Inao. It was a really cool Miyazaki-influenced sort of side-scroller game. I was very excited that it was going to be created. Had him on the show, and right there on the program, I backed it on Kickstarter, and I urged you, my listeners, to do just the same. Well, 24 hours after the episode was put on to iTunes and our official website, the Kickstarter for the game was canceled just out of the blue. And they had mentioned that it was canceled because they were starting to receive threats. And initially, I thought it was something like someone was like threatening them with their lives and everything. And I thought that, and if that was the case, then that's terrible that that would lead to such a cancellation. Well, come to find out, thanks to a couple of people who posted onto the Boston Bash Brigade Facebook, the threats came from unpaid interns who weren't going to get credit for the work that they were doing on the game, and it was more of legal threats. So, yeah, it was a really big shocker. Apparently, that was like this, the one guy who was making the game right in France had a bunch of unpaid people helping them make it. He was going to take all the credit, and if they had told anything, you know, he threatened them and such, and it just got really nasty. And I wanted to come on here and just state that, you know, this came to me as a really big shock. And as someone who, you know, as my job as a journalist in the video game industry, it's tough to really pick out like the good and the bad when it comes to video game development. Like, there are things that you don't know that go on behind the scenes of video games. And this is just one incident where a very promising video game turned out was being made with some really very bad decisions, basically. And it's really sad that this happens. And even sadder when it affects some really hardworking people who weren't going to be getting credit. Now, I do want to also state that there was a really big part of me that the person that I interviewed, Corinne, who was such a sweetheart, you know, talking to her back and forth. And it's funny, like after we were done with our interview, she was talking to me about how she was having trouble adjusting from using a MacBook to a laptop PC. And I was telling her I was having the exact same issues just a few minutes before I started doing the podcast with her. So she seemed like a really nice person. And she's actually stationed in Tokyo. So there's a really good chance that she had no idea that this stuff was happening behind the scenes as well. There's a really good chance. I mean, you know, there's a tiny itty-bitty chance that she might have known, but there's a much larger chance that she didn't know any of this stuff. But in any case, for Bloomy Light Studio to be doing these sorts of practices, it's just a really big no-no in my book. And I hope that there will be some laws put into place. I think there are laws that are put into place that prevent interns from going unpaid for their services. And if there aren't, there really needs to be. Like, this needs to be, like, a worldwide sort of law. Like, I don't know if this is something that you have to, like, go through the entire United Nations to make it happen, but whatever the case may be, I personally believe that it is wrong to not pay your interns. People who have worked tirelessly on a project deserve to get the credit, just both financially and on paper and in the credits and all that stuff. And the fact that this company wasn't going to do that for Lynn and the Spirits of Anau, it's just really bad. And I want to apologize to you listeners as well for it's not that, like, I had no idea that this was going on, but I still feel really bad that I told you to go out there and support the Kickstarter. At the very least, we're not going to have to worry about paying for it or anything like that. The project's been canceled on Kickstarter. No one's going to have to be worried about paying for anything whatsoever. Let's just take this as a lesson where sometimes a project can be too good. Like, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Sometimes a project looks too good to be true. And this is a scenario where this was the case. And, like, for me, because I always have, like, developers come on my show whenever they have time to help promote their upcoming games. Now, some of the games come out really well, like stuff like Assault Android Cactus, when I had those guys on the show. That game looks fantastic. And when I had the guys on Gunscape, it was very promising, but every time I go on the game on my Xbox One, nobody's online, so I can't really play, like, any of the online aspects, which is what the game is mostly built upon. You see, that's the thing. Like, when I interview these people via Skype, like, I personally haven't had a chance to go hands-on with the game itself beforehand. The only time that's ever happened was when I did the interview with Garode about their upcoming game Valhalla, the waifu bartending game, which should hopefully be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And that's because I played the game at PAX East beforehand and felt really bad that I wasn't able to do an interview with those people at the time. But everything else that I've done an interview for on No Borders No Race, unless it's filmed at a convention or anything, like, for the most part, I have yet to play the game. So I just want to make that clear as well. So I just wanted to make damn sure that, as my listeners will know, that if I ever do any interviews with some upcoming video games, there's a good chance that I myself haven't gone hands-on with them yet, unless it was at, like, a convention or someplace else on location. So I don't mean to lead you on blindly. I'm just passionate about really good ideas in the video game realm, as well as other parts of the entertainment industry. So with that, I want to say I'm sorry for pushing you guys to go and donate towards a game that was being built on shady aspects. And hopefully we won't have to go down this path again. Crossing my fingers really hard on that one. All right. Okay. The seriousness of the show is over. Let us commence with this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck, Emma Borgo, and I've got two of my favorite guys joining me here on this week's episode. First and foremost, he is the George Clooney of video game journalism, the one and only Mr. DCD.
Hey, what's up?
And lastly, he is one half of the Fleming Brothers over at Wicked Anime, Mr. Andrew Fleming.
Yes, hello, I am Andrew.
Yes, you are Andrew. It's so good to actually have you two finally join me on this podcast show together.
All right, well, I have seen Robert pop in and out on my Facebook feed every once in a while because of you, so that's my familiarity with him, so that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, maybe I talk too much.
Now, before we jump into this episode, there was something that really came to my attention. I forget it was on Reddit or somebody had posted it. You know what? It was our buddy J.C. Riley had posted this. Rick and Morty is now airing in Japan.
Now, you haven't lived until you actually seen him talk with the Japanese dialogue. That's it. What I live for.
Yes. Yeah, I got to say, it is pretty spot on. I highly enjoy watching it.
I know.
Even if you don't understand what they're saying, it's still amazing. It's like one of those things you just got to kick back and be like, this is some crazy ass shit.
Exactly. Like, I love Rick and Morty. Like, don't get me wrong. I don't think anything can really replace, like, Justin Roiland and the English cast, but they did a great job with the characters that we've heard so far in the Japanese dub of Rick and Morty.
See, the only thing that makes me mad is, like, when you talk about Adult Swim stuff, they're spot on. They're doing some great stuff with their Adult Swim stuff. But when you talk about the Cartoon Network series, like me myself, I can't stand the new Powerpuff Girls. It's not the same to me.
I haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah, it's a waste. I don't know why. It seems like something's off. Maybe it's the lack of Tara Strong doing the voice of Bubbles. I don't know what it is. It just feels like it's off for a reboot.
I like every other episode. But I agree. It does.
You do your thing real quick. I'm just going to say the one thing I was going to say real quick is that I know exactly why Adult Swim is back on their game, because they have the balls to bring back Samurai Jack. That's
yes.
it. That's just what I'm saying.
Yes, yes.
But go ahead.
But what I was about to say is that, as my listeners will know, a couple weeks ago I was praising the Powerpuff Girls reboot. But now, after the last few weeks, I'm like, maybe I should kind of take that back.
I'm still not familiar with it. I do like some of the Cartoon Network programming, but it's true that Adult Swim is on a different... Because back in the 90s when Cartoon Network was around, that was a whole different game with all the cartoons that no longer exist. And however, I think we are going to be bringing this up on our show on tomorrow's recording, that they are bringing back another Ed and Eddy movie. Like, Danny Antonucci announced himself that they're working on a movie that's a sequel to the last movie that came out, where they found Eddie's brother.
Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, Adult Swim, I mean, between Samurai Jack, between what they're doing with Rick and Morty, a third season's coming, and it's not going to be next year, it's going to be later this year, which I'm psyched for, and of course Venture Brothers and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
It's still the home of the most bizarre shit I've ever seen. Too Many Cooks. Trying to figure out what's going on with that.
Mr. Pickles is a great example too.
Oh yeah, I'm like, it's...
You see, Mr. Pickles, I don't tune into Mr. Pickles for the laughs. I tune in to see how screwed up it gets.
Oh, yeah, it's getting really screwed up. But we're off tangent there. But, yeah, if you can, guys, look up the Japanese feed for Rick and Morty. It's on a different level. It's just as much fun as actually watching a regular episode of Rick and Morty.
Like, I would legit rebuy the Blu-ray sets of Rick and Morty if they added the Japanese dub to it.
Yeah. In fact, that's what they need to do with one of the episodes in the third season. Just have them speak Japanese, and all of a sudden they don't even realize they're speaking Japanese, and they try to fix it.
Or it's just one of the multiple universes where it is Rick and Morty, but they are just Japanese.
With the screaming sun in the background.
But yes.
Oh, man, I got to catch up on season two.
Yeah, you do. Blu-ray comes out next month?
Yep. I'm already on tap to receive it.
Same here. But yes, Rick and Morty now airs in Japan, and all is right in the world, for the most part. Okay, maybe not so much. At least Rick and Morty
now
airs
at least all is right in the Adult Swim world. How about that?
I would agree with that. What would you say, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, let us jump into this week's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And today, we're going to start things off on a great note with the title track from Molise's latest album, due in stores this June. I gave the album 4 stars out of 5, and it's certainly a record you cannot miss.
This song is called Bye.
was Grapevine with Heavenly from this year's Babble Babble album. I kind of love the OK Computer vibe I get from that specific song. And we're back here with the DCD and Andrew from Wicked Anime. And right now, we're going to dive into hell because Doom is finally here.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you this. If it wasn't for Overwatch, it would easily dominate this month. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a battle when Overwatch drops.
It's
like in
true.
Just a couple of days. It's going to be crazy. But
I mean, I pre-ordered my, even though, so my brother Jonathan pre-ordered his copy at GameStop, and I pre-ordered my copy over Amazon. So we're both going to have our own copies so we can all play at the same time. It's going to be great. I can't freaking wait.
This week was ironic at my job. Because I've gotten two different shooters that were on opposite spectrums of what to do with a reboot. Like, Doom is on the high spectrum, but we'll get into that. But guess what's on the low spectrum?
Homefront the Revolution.
Homefront the Revolution, yeah. It was just, I did not get into this game at all. It was poor graphics, just bad gameplay.
And I know the still guys downloading on my PS4.
And I was trying not to be too rough because I know the PR guy is behind it, but I'm like, I have to tell them how much it sucks. I'm sorry.
I know.
The
I know,
downside to my job.
It is the downside, and I love the guys over at Deep Silver. And, you know, I'll have my opinion soon once it finally finishes downloading on my friggin' PS4.
It's still downloading four
it's
days
still
later.
Yes, it is still downloading.
That's an omen, sir.
That is an omen. But we're not here to talk about that sort of omen. We're talking about more of a hellish omen.
Yeah,
which
let's
is,
go back to the good game.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Doom. And can I just ask, what gets into people's heads that makes them go, hey, you know what's a great idea? Let's open up a portal of hell and steal their energy from them. I don't think they'd mind.
Dude, you know what? People are mabbing all over the place, okay? You got Loki opening a portal in the Avengers. Why? Because he's a god, or he wants to... You know, people have this mentality that they can try to change the world in certain ways. Case in point, Donald Trump. But, you know... but you get my point. You get my point. Some people are just have a certain mentality like that, and they won't let it go or anything like that. So you have to understand, Doom is about having a villain that can do that shit. So, yep. You know, you just go and you accept it, okay? You just go and accept it and be like, you're the guy that has to clean house. You're the guy that has to get the mop and just knock the shit out of demons. Or, well, by mop, I mean, you know, machine gun.
Right. We're not talking about that. Because I know there is that video game that's out where you're basically the cleanup guy who has to clean up everything after a bloody fight. I forget the name of it. But no, Doom is Dust. Doom. This is like the this is the
and
first...
actually along those lines. I'm not sure if you, I like reading all the loading screen stuff when you're going into a new map. And level 3, which is the one that I actually just finished. I'm only on map 4 as of right now because I'm a completionist. Like I'm actually getting all the secrets and all the collectibles and all the maps before I move on. When you go into the Foundry map, it says what's his name, Samuel Hayden.
Yeah,
who's the guy who's talking to you?
Yeah.
It says Samuel Hayden is offering his help, is offering you his help, and it just said you don't need it. Like in the description, it's just like telling you, yeah, you don't need it. You don't.
But you get back at him. You get back at him because you have to destroy those three little machines and everything like that. If you do this, we won't be able to conserve. Bam! I don't give a crap. Bam! And he's like, well, I hope you're happy.
Yes, I am happy because now the portal to hell is closed and no more demons can get in
but
here.
But still a ton of demons to demon.
Yes, there are still tons of demons. And you see, I feel like the mentality of them is like, hey, you know what? There's no air out here in Mars. They're probably just going to suffocate if they try to get through there. No.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of the way that the game is set up, and I love the way it's set up. It's set up so that it doesn't dwell too much in the story, and it just lets you hop right in the action. I mean, there are some segments where you have to like sit back and you have to watch like this character, what she's doing with the portal, or you know, trying to activate this without really having hands on. But then it just right back into the action, just boom, running at a clip. And let me just say, I will give ID Software some credit here. The game runs very smoothly across the board. I mean, I expected to run on PC on high-end settings and everything like that, but on an Xbox One and PlayStation 4, both together, they both run at 60 frames per second.
Gorgeous 60 frames a second.
Which I was really impressed by, you know. And this is after, you know, playing something like Uncharted 4, setting a new standard for video game visuals. Anyway, but this comes along and sets its own standard, which is really cool.
And what I like about this is that it shows how much work they put into this. It was, when was this Doom first announced? Like back in 2007, 2008?
It was announced a while ago, but it wasn't officially shown until about a couple years ago at QuakeCon. Barely missed seeing the first footage for it, and I was so mad. I was like, can't you run it for me again? I just got here on a late flight. Come on. You're like, no.
And then it was that last year's Bethesda's press event over E3 when you saw it really in action. And just watching you switch from weapon to weapon. And then the chainsaw in action.
Oh, dude, the chainsaw kills are incredible in this. I mean, on top of that, when you pick up one of those flaming skulls, and you can run up to demons and practically rip their heads in half. Inches from the screen. It was just so good. And I was just
the Berserk mode was, like, the fact that they brought back the Berserk mode from, like, the old one is just brilliant. Because when Doom 3 came out, Doom 3 really focused on the horror and the story element of Doom. And this one is very much bringing back the classic, Vector Doom. Just Doom. Like, the first classic Doom. They bring it back, it's gorgeous, and it plays like that. I mean, you pick up yellow key cards, or colored key cards to open up colored doors. You move at a million miles per hour, there's just monsters everywhere. Like, it feels nostalgic, like the single player campaign feels nostalgic, and that is nice.
And going to that, I feel like that this is one of the most fast-paced first-person shooters I've come across in many years. Like, even on the easiest of settings, like, the demons come at you hard, fast, and brutally unapologetically. And there's that sort of tension that occurs when shit gets, like, real too quiet, where even the tiniest of rustling from above, like, makes you go, whoa, what was that? What was that? Because there's still that horror element to Doom that Andrew just mentioned that was in the third one. You still get that feeling of that in the new one as well.
I mean, they know how to translate that kind of tension, I think.
Yeah, this one is definitely making you feel like, so I really liked playing, I didn't play it a lot, but I got the opportunity to play it when I first got my PS4 because my buddy let me borrow some of his games when I played Bloodborne. And Bloodborne was really cool to me because even though you were like this kind of weakling little hunter and, you know, fighting these giant monsters who are obviously a lot stronger than you and are a huge threat, they made it very apparent that you were hunting them. Like, they were not hunting you as the hunter. Like, because every time you killed a boss, it said, prey slaughtered.
Yes.
And that's very much what this game makes me feel like. It's just like, oh no, like, you're the single marine. Like, you've got all the power. Like, this is perfectly fine. Like, you can take care of this whole thing by yourself, and everything is hunky-dory.
It's kind of like the quote from Rorschach in Watchmen. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
And
exactly.
Can I just say, it is so good that you don't have to worry about running out of ammo. I mean, you have your default pistol on you, which actually isn't bad for the lighter enemies, but it's shit against bosses.
Oh yeah.
You know, then you have weapons like, you know, the shotgun, the BFG, the rocket launcher, all the classics brought back greatly to life. I think all the weapons are excellent in this game.
And what I like too is that there are no weapon drops in the game. You can't, like, pick up a gun and not have to drop another one to pick up the other one.
Exactly.
You keep the guns. You get all the guns. You get all the chainsaws. You get the grenades. Guns.
Yeah, you know, I run around in Homefront for 5 minutes and I'm out of fucking bullets. And I'm like, come on!
There's 21 guns that they built into this game. It's absolutely amazing. I've only picked up about 5 of them so far. That was actually one of the things is how good the game, it rewards you for exploring, you know, so any exploration that you do, it actually rewards you for it. Like, you know, you find all the secrets. I found the plasma rifle early because it gives you the plasma rifle naturally in the foundry level. But I actually found the pulse rifle before I even found the heavy machine gun, which is the opposite of what it's supposed to be. I still use the heavy machine gun more, but I still got the pulse rifle early.
And what
pulse rifles.
Yeah, the pulse rifles. I think I got the pulse rifle when I entered the hell level. That was, like, one of the first weapons I got when I entered the hell level. And what I like, too, is, like, it gives you that sort of maniacal sort of feel when you're playing this game. Like, when you first pick up that chainsaw and you use it for that first time, you can't help
but just let out like the most evil cackle that is in your belly.
I gotta be honest, I actually walked by the chainsaw the first time I didn't even know
what?
It was there. Yeah.
Well, it's not entirely highlighted in your radar. You gotta walk up and you see, oh, I can just take this chainsaw out.
Yeah, I was actually in a secret room. So I jumped into a secret room, and then through the window, I was like, oh, look, there's the chainsaw over there. And I was like, wait a second, I've been in there before. I just, like, totally walked by it.
Sometimes, it's, you know, you can walk past a weapon because the game's fast-pacing. It gives you an opportunity to get him again because sometimes you can just go up to Dead
yes.
Souls and pick him up anyway. But you can miss him. It's kind of easy to miss him. You don't just walk over and pick him up. You have to go over and yank it out of their dead corpse, pretty much.
And speaking of, like, dead stuff, let's talk about the glory kills. When that happens, it's just gorgeously gory when it occurs.
They can be repetitive. I will admit they can be repetitive.
A little bit.
Kicking somebody in the back and kicking them in the front, but they are fun to pull off. They are a good time to execute.
I thought it was a really nice touch that every enemy has quite a few glory kills. Depending on where your reticle is aimed at them, like when you pull off the glory kill is how you kill them. Like in the foundry level, one of the challenges is curb stomp the heavy soldiers, you know, or the possessed soldiers. And so when you get the glory kill glow on the HUD to pull it off for them, you jump in the air and then hit the glory kill and you jump on their head and it explodes.
Yes,
it's fantastic.
They really are amazing when you set them up like that. I really can't get enough of them. I still think my greatest glory kill is when you grab when you're activated in Berserker mode and you grab the sides of a demon's head and you just rip his face apart.
Just rip it right in half. Yeah, that was so fantastic. Like the first time I did it, you just grab the demon's face and you just rip it in half.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
No, my favorite.
You don't get to do that in the original game.
My favorite so far is when you come across a cyber demon, you rip off his horn and you just stab it in his face.
I haven't met any cyber demon. Well, I've only made it to level 4.
I think you're about to.
The best is yet to come.
Yes, the best is yet to go. Because let me tell you. Because let me tell you, like with that hell level was one of the most harrowing and challenging first person shooter experiences I've ever had in a video game. Because every second you're in there, it feels like something is going to kill you. And it occurs on a constant basis.
Let me ask you a question. What difficulty did you play it on?
All right, I'm the sissy. I'm on the easy setting mode. Oh.
So easy, you can take it. Because I'll tell you this. You have not experienced exactly what Doom can handle you unless you're playing one of the higher settings. I'm talking pure nightmare mode.
Because
is ridiculous. Ridiculous! I couldn't even survive the first level. It's so hard. It's so nuts.
I guess it was reported that the first person to beat the Ultra Nightmare mode did it in 5 hours.
Yeah.
Really?
It just took forever. Yeah. There's a video of it on YouTube, and I'm like, dude, are you human? What the hell?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Ultra Nightmare is the one where if you die, you have to start all the way from the beginning. Correct?
I think that's permadeath.
Permadeath. Yes.
Yeah. I started on Hurt Me Plenty.
Yeah, that's what I started too, but then I had to tone it down a bit because I was dying on a constant basis.
Really?
Because
I haven't died yet. The only time I actually died so far was when I was in the foundry and I accidentally overshot a ledge and fell into the lava.
Oh! But I loved what happened when you did.
Right?
I see this.
Evan,
did you see when you died in the... I don't know if we should spoil it here, but if you remember movies from the 90s, you will fit right in with what happens.
Yeah, See, and I think that's one of the things I really love about this game, too, is same way, like, every time you find a collectible and he kind of plays with it a little bit, the game is not... It's really not that scared to make fun of itself. Like,
right.
It knows... It's not taking itself seriously. You're running around blasting demons in the face at 1,000 miles an hour and doing all these glory kills. It's just like, oh, well, you know, this is ridiculous.
It's insane. I mean, I have had a few accidents. I mean, that's the one thing I think that keeps Doom from being like a 10 out of 10 for me is the platforming can be a little scattershot. Like, you try to grab a ledge and you accidentally miss it and you fall to your death or something like that. It doesn't happen often enough to really annoy me, but... you can just tell when you, son of a bitch, I had that ledge, you know.
I know.
Or when you walk, or when I did, I was like walking through the hallway and I had no idea where to go and everything like that. All of a sudden, this giant piston goes, bam, and I'm dead. You know that, you know what I'm talking about, when you go into that room and you don't realize you have to go into that smaller area, and all of a sudden this big tank thing just comes rolling by, and if you don't get out of its way, you're dead.
No, the one that got me was like I had to jump up and reach a higher area. So when I thought, oh, maybe if I jump on the train at the right moment, I climb up to it. Now I just got squashed.
You get hit by the train, yes. So I only died from accidental deaths, but they were still funny as hell. It's one of those games where you live and learn, and you can go back to it. It's not like limited lives.
Yeah, and it really is. It's almost kind of a game too, where it's like, well, you almost kind of want to experience dying because all the enemies kind of get their own glory kills on you. Mm-hmm. So you kind of want to experience like, well, what? It's the same way like when you played Tomb Raider. Like every single level in Tomb Raider had a unique death. Like every time you died, it was horribly brutal. And it was kind of disturbing at points, but it was just like, this animation is gorgeous. Like, how does she die in this way? How does she die this way? It's just like kind of like the same thing with Doom. Well, if I get killed by this enemy, how am I going to die? Like, what's going to happen? Like, because, you know, they always had the demo where the skeleton, the rocket jockey guy, rips off his arm and then, like, smashes you in the face. So.
Now, we should talk about another thing here, too, because the single-player component of the game is just one part. There's also multiplayer, and a lot of players don't get into multiplayer, but you have to realize multiplayer was also just a small part of the original Doom.
Right.
So I'd like to talk about this for a minute, because I actually enjoy multiplayer. It's not, you know, Call of Duty or anything on that level, but it's still enjoyable, especially when you get the Demon Revenant.
Yeah.
Thing can do some damage.
I haven't had my hands in multiplayer yet. Like, I haven't tried it out. But I'm actually on the other... I'm actually not a multiplayer guy, even though, like, yes, I'm going to get Overwatch because I love the hell out of Overwatch.
No, Overwatch is a whole new ballgame.
And it's a different community, basically. But the campaign and the multiplayer are two completely different beasts. Like, if you go in to the multiplayer expecting what you got in the single player, it's not the same thing. This is more, you know, run-of-the-mill, Call of Duty-esque like multiplayer gameplay, which I think is nice because I feel like there's too many games now that's like, oh, look, we made a multiplayer game and there happens to be a single-player campaign, so you can play it if you want. Doom is very much like, we made this single-player campaign because it's Doom, and there's multiplayer.
Yeah, if you want. But I like the idea of adding something like Snap Map for those people that really want to give multiplayer a try. So, that is a cool mode. I think it's very,
very true. And believe it or not, I actually know the guy who helped develop Snap Map. I went to college with him. Yeah. He was working on it in secret for an entire year. And he only could announce that he was working on it when the game got released, and that's, I found that out on Facebook, and I had no idea that he was even working on it for it, or any of those kinds of projects. But Snap Map reminds me of one of my favorite first-person shooters ever, which is Time Splitters.
Yes.
Ooh.
Actually, my favorite part of Homefront: The Revolution was the fact that you could play two Time Splitters 2 levels in the game. That's it.
Oh man, yeah. So with the Snap Map there, and it reminding me of Time Splitters and everything like that, especially Time Splitters Future Perfect, which is the third one, where you got to share your levels online, and so it gives you this extra element of, you know, it, because you don't have to build Snap Maps for multiplayer. You can build them to make your own campaign maps. So you beat the main campaign, and then you can go download other people's levels and play that the same way you could in Time Splitters. It's a perfect formula. Then it gives it so much replay value. It's unbelievable.
And that was what I was about to bring up. Yes, because Snap Map, even when you're done with the campaign, and after you play it a few times over and get all the special goodies, you can go back into Snap Map, play all these community-created levels, and it adds a new sort of life to do.
It does. I mean, it's sort of like when you have the ability to create your own stuff. I mean, look what it did for Little Big Planet. Look what it did for Super Mario Maker.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So why can't you do something like that with Doom to give people this little mature style thing and just load it? And it's also very balanced so that, you know, it doesn't like crud over with like P piece of shit levels that have like 1,000 demons or something like that. You actually have to put thought into your level designs, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I just played with it and muddied around maps and snapped some stuff together, but I haven't had like a real good go at it. But I'm really interested in seeing all the people, the maps that other people have made. I guess apparently people have been remaking the original Doom levels like to a T. So yeah, I really want to go check those out.
From what I've seen, they're really cool. Yeah,
I imagine.
And I'll tell you this: the thing about Doom, it just makes you realize how devoted Bethesda is to its franchise. Because this isn't the first time that the company knocked, you know, an old school franchise out of the park. 2 years ago, it released a game called Wolfenstein: The New Order, developed by Machine Games. I still think it's one of the best first-person shooters of this generation. Does that
agreed.
Multiplayer?
Absolutely
no.
agree.
But it is so damn polished. It plays wonderfully. Last year's follow-up, The Old Blood, was just as good. I really enjoyed that as well, even though it was a little bit shorter. And now we have Doom. And these guys, it almost seems like they are on the ultimate roll. Like, they know these franchises, and they respect the hell out of these franchises. And you got to wonder what's next. You know, I would kill, personally, I would kill to see what they do with Quake.
Oh, yeah.
You see, Heretic.
I would like to see Quake, a franchise that they haven't touched in almost two decades, I would like to see. I know it's more of a family-based one, but I don't care, because I love playing it as a kid. Commander Keen. I would kill to see that Commander Keen.
Especially to, that's how you would beat Doom 2. I think it was Doom 2. Yeah. At the end of Doom 2, after you beat the Cyber Demon, you go in and you kill all the Commander Keens. And then the game ends or something like that.
Yeah, add that as DLC to the game. Oh, I mean, it's just really great how well polished everything is about this. It's Doom, like I said, aside from some minor platforming issues, aside from a couple of little things here and there, it nails it out of the park. It's everything.
And the thing that kind of brings it home for me, which I absolutely fell in love with, that's just the best texture onto the game ever, is that freaking soundtrack, man.
Oh my god.
The
soundtrack is very good.
Like, the industrial metal is just so perfect. I am just so into it. And so, like, I mean, I'm a metalhead anyway, and I especially love industrial metal and all that stuff. So it's just glorious to me. Like, it's so beautiful.
You're kind of waiting for, like, Till Lindemann from Rammstein to come and be like, Ghost Feeding in Heiden, Yeskifuldestein, during this whole, like, death metal sort of soundtrack. It is just such an amazing soundtrack. I'm hoping it gets like an awesome limited edition vinyl release. I would buy the crap out of it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of games are doing that these days, so I wouldn't be surprised if Bethesda popped it up at, like, you know, selling as an exclusive item at QuakeCon or something like that.
Ooh, yeah.
Please,
I'd
don't
buy
do
the
that
hell
but...
out of it. Sorry.
Please don't do
if
that.
If I go, I'll think about picking it up for you. If I
thank you.
But
thank you.
It's just Bethesda. I mean, when ID Software was announced as the developer behind it, and you saw everything that happened with Doom 3, you were thinking, was there any doubt that they would release anything less than polished like they did with Doom? Because I mean, I admit I had a little bit of skepticism at first because Doom 3 was good, but it wasn't Doom good. You felt something was a little bit missing and everything like that. But you know, then you get a look at the gameplay and everything like that. I'd be like, okay, these guys still love us. You know, this isn't Rage. You know, so.
Yeah, although to be fair, I liked Rage. I thought Rage was a great game.
Okay.
But I felt like it was lacking in the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah, I think that and the fact that you had to set aside, like, what, like 8 gigs of hard drive space to get it to work. It's just that, like, oh, come on.
That too.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was pretty cool. But then along came Borderlands and made, like, the whole desert theme a little more luxurious. But, you know. But, no, I mean, it's just really surprising how well Doom came across. And I think everybody should definitely check it out. It's like Wolfenstein. I think it'll grow in the community. I think it'll get better as time goes on with more snap map, with whatever DLC they have planned. You know, I think it's just going to thrive. Even in the face of Overwatch, I could see this game just completely thriving and continuing on for a few more months.
Well, especially because both Overwatch and Doom are jump in and out games. You know, so you don't have to dedicate a bunch of time to it, because it's like, well, maybe even in one go, you can play some Doom and then you can play some Overwatch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, instead of like hopping into like Call of Duty's campaign, okay, you got to fly to space to do this shit.
Great.
Oh, boy.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I want to like that game, but right.
Oh yeah, I haven't liked Call of Duty since they left World War II. I mean, I hate Activision, so I'll say that on the internet.
Okay. Okay.
No, you can say it. I don't think a lot of people like Activision.
Oh no, yeah.
I'm still going to see them at E3, but I mean, I got my doubts about Infinite Warfare. I'd rather go back to Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1 looks awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I thought, Infinite Warfare looked like a goof. Like, why are we even calling it Call of Duty anymore? Like, I mean, we're calling it Call of Duty because...
they can't call it Halo, obviously.
Yeah. Well, they're calling it Call of Duty so that all the fanboys can masturbate over it, you know, so...
Wow. To me, it's all about... I'm just eager to see Titanfall 2 myself, but that's just me.
Yeah.
And you know what? Personally, I'm looking more forward to Sniper Elite 4.
Ah!
Yes.
Yeah. Shoot all the Nazis in the balls.
Yeah. Shoot them in the head and watch all the, like, you know, the X-ray stuff happening and be like, oh!
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I'm just saying, in the face of that, Doom can really hold its own against a lot of these games that are coming up because, like I said, it's just so damn polished and so damn fun to play.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Other shooters that I won't mention because I've already mentioned them too much here, but it's really impressive.
Absolutely. And you know, this is, I've been waiting years for this to come out, and it was truly worth it. It's everything that a next gen Doom should be without softening its convictions and trying to update it for modern gamers. It's a title that classic Doom fans like myself are happy to jump into, and I'm pretty sure it'll make any newcomers a fan of the franchise in a near instant.
And it doesn't hold back in its carnage. That's what I really enjoy.
For sure.
For sure. So if you don't own this game or you have no desire to play it, then you just can't call yourself a fan of the first-person shooter genre. I'm sorry. I know, shots fired, but you can't call yourself an FPS lover if you can't get into Doom.
Well, you can. We just won't believe you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a short musical break of... DCD, let's see if you can figure out what I'm trying to do here. Right. Super! What? Come on, think of a recent video game. Super.
Super. Smash Brothers. I don't know, dude.
Okay. Alright, have either of you played Super Hot yet?
Oh yeah, Super. Well, see, the way you say it and the way they say it in the game are completely different. You're just saying, Super. Great, but you're not saying super hot.
Super hot.
It's how you're saying it. That's why I didn't get it. Be like, super, man, what the
f-? All right.
But yeah, Super Hot is a great game on Xbox One if you haven't played it yet. Basically, a tactical shooter where nobody moves unless you move, so you have to like plan out your attacks so you don't die. Because it's like a one-hit and you're dead sort of game.
Yep. Definitely.
But it's really good.
Yeah, a great puzzle game. But anyway, I've got the song that is the end theme to Super Hot. It's from a band called Republica, and this is from their 1984 album, No Stan Tango. And it's a nice little Polish rock song called Sai Parloa. their 2014 album Namida no Ochiru, that was Nanoripe with Nana Iro Biore, the theme song to season 1 of Non Non Biore, a great track for a great anime series. I saw Nanoripe at Anime Boston this past year, and they're one of those Japanese bands where they don't have, like, another band you can compare them to, like an American or British equivalent of them. And it's still good to hear some uniqueness in the indie rock world, especially when it comes from the land of the rising sun.
You know, I can't help but think more bands need to take the baby metal route and try a tour in the U.S.
I agree. And I know Andrew didn't get a chance to see them when they performed live at Anime Boston, but you've heard a couple of their songs, correct?
Nanoripe?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure I have.
Yeah, if you watched Devil Is a Part-Timer, they did the end theme for that.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Okay, so we're going to be talking about something the complete opposite of Doom. We're going to take a more calming route, and we're going to talk about an anime series that I've been just a little bit going a little crazy over, even though it's a show that's made for relaxation. And I'm talking about Flying Witch, a new anime series airing in Japan this spring. It's streaming on Crunchyroll and the Anime Network, and it's been licensed by Sentai Filmworks. And I did talk about the show on a past No Borders No Race, and I recently published a review of the first 6 episodes, giving it a 4.5-star rating. And I know, Andrew, you've seen the first couple episodes of this, correct? Have you caught up on the whole series?
Oh, I watch it every weekend it comes out. I'm just not up to date on the latest episode that's come out.
Right.
So, like, I haven't seen this Trident's episode yet.
I have not seen it, but I believe you guys are going to tell me why it's worth the watch.
Absolutely. So the premise of Flying Witch is about a witch named Makoto who stays with her cousins Kei and Shinatsu, and it's basically her training and honing her skills while getting some assistance here and there from her older sister Akane, as well as a few other characters that have come and gone throughout the entire series. And for me personally, what I love about this show, it has this very relaxing atmosphere, and the jokes are very lighthearted, which also helps when some of the more bigger gags occur on the show.
Yeah.
Good example of this is in the very first episode, like, Kei introduces Makoto to Shinatsu, and, like, Shinatsu's like, "Oh, who is this?" And then Kei just jokingly goes, "Oh, this is your real mother." And, like, without missing a beat, like, Shinatsu just grabs Makoto and goes, "Okazan!"
Yeah, that was really bizarre. Like, especially because, like, you see their mother, like, in every episode. It's like, why would you think that?
I think it was just to cut the tension of a stranger entering the house.
Yeah.
Someone that Shinatsu's not familiar to. See, I like the humor in that, but then it helps to build up when a gag involving a mandrake occurs.
Yeah, so at the end of the episode, Makoto finds, you know, or is, you know, like, "I sense that there's, like, a magical presence around here," and she wants to give a gift to one of her new friends. And so she's searching through the brush, and is just like, "All right, cover your ears," as she rips it out of the ground, and then the mandrake's like, "Oh! Oh!" And then it just starts screaming.
And what I liked about the whole animation of that part is that it goes from something so lighthearted, easy, carefree, straight into some Junji Ito shit. Like, it feels like something that he, like, a creation that he would have done.
For those of you who don't know, Junji Ito is the best horror artist on the face of the planet.
There's Gyo, there's Amari, was it Amari Park, not Amari Park, Amari Canyon, or...
Yeah, Uzumaki and his Junji Ito short stories, all very scary.
Yeah, and initially he was the guy who was
going to... That's what this meant.
Yeah, he was the guy who was initially going to do all the monster designs for Silent Hills, which got canceled.
Yeah, for the new Silent Hills, which is another stab in the heart. So they pull out this horrifying-looking mandrake who has, like, no sensibility of ever existing ever and should not exist ever, like, out of the ground, and she's just holding on to it like, "It's your present!" And it's, like, touching her and, like, squirming and really gross. It's pretty funny.
And he's, like, crossing his arms, like, "Nope, mandrake not having this shit today."
But yeah, it's really interesting, because watching this show, as we've mentioned before, is very relaxing. It's really well-paced. It has this piano melodic background music to it all the time going. The jokes are very, I wouldn't even say they're dry. They're just very well-timed and lightheartedly paced.
And it's very observant. Like, when I did my review of this anime, I compared its slice of life approach to a very popular comic book series here in America called American Splendor by the late great Harvey Pekar. And it has that sort of, let's take something that may be a little bit mundane, but make it more interesting. And that's what Flying Witch does here.
Mm-hmm. By the way, did you ever see the American Splendor film?
Oh yeah, I have that in my DVD collection.
It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. I think that's the film that made me a huge fan of Paul Giamatti.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
But anyway, back on topic. Sorry.
But that's what I like about Flying Witches. It takes, like, yes, it has witches and everything, but they treat the witches as if, oh, it's just basically a part of common life right now.
Oh, yeah, it's just a thing. Like, you know, people just know, oh, yeah, there's witches, but, you know, you don't know who's a witch, and, you know, they're not supposed to talk about it, even though everybody finds out all the time. Like, there's no penalty for knowing if somebody's a witch or not. They just kind of are.
Right. It's not like in the Harry Potter universe where, like, the Muggles will never know about the existence of the witches and Hogwarts and all that stuff. Or, no, the wizards, rather.
Yeah,
I can't believe I just mixed up wizards and witches again.
Oh, nice going there, Evan.
Everything's ruined.
Oh.
Lord of the Rings will never be the same again. I'll tell you, I mean, I've never seen this series, but now that I have it, you know, on my Crunchyroll radar, I will definitely check it out. But, I mean, I could recommend a few more animes that I like in terms of just winding down and relaxing, because there are certain ones that channel to me in their own goofy little way.
Absolutely. Cool, I feel like let's touch on that. Like, anime made for relaxation, because most people think of anime and it's action-packed or, like, comedic or perverted or, yes, yeah, or Attack on Titan. No one gives much attention to the anime that's created to help people relax and just watch something sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go ahead. What are the animes that help you relax?
Well, this one just actually premiered on a YouTube channel for the Paramount Vault. It's a 2001 movie by Satoshi Kon called Millennium Actress.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably the only movie by him that I have not seen, believe it or not.
Yeah, and it's on the Vault. It's free to watch. I mean, they're not even charging anything. It's called the Paramount Vault. They have a bunch of different movies on there, like, you know, Death Wish 3 and North Dallas 40 and stuff like that. But Millennium Actress is actually an anime that's worth checking out, I think.
Yeah, Satoshi Kon's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and I think Millennium Actress is probably the most calm film that Satoshi Kon had ever made.
Compared to Perfect Blue, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, or Paprika, for that matter.
Yeah. And even a little bit of like Tokyo Godfathers as well, just a little bit. But I feel like Millennium Actress is definitely his most calming and relaxing film.
Well, and the fact you can watch it free online is great. You know, instead of having to, like, rent it or track down a VHS copy or anything like that, just go to the Paramount Vault. You'll see it right there at the top of the list, right next to Death Wish 3. I don't know why, but there it is. So there's that one. I always love a good Miyazaki flick, but that also ties in to the Lupin franchise. And these are, you know, great action films and everything like that, but they're carefree sort of like heist movies. I still think my favorite Lupin movie is obviously The Castle of Cagliostro, which is this wonderful adventure. I mean, this was one of the early anime films before anime became mainstream with Akira and everything like that. This film was made in, like, the late 70s. By Hayao Miyazaki and his team. And it's, to me, still remains one of the definitive anime adventures. And I could just kick back and watch it on a Sunday afternoon with a beer in my hand and forget everything. I mean, it's one of those movies that I really enjoy. Have you guys seen it?
Castle of Cagliostro? I own it.
Yeah, me too. I have the Blu-ray version with the special features.
I have the original manga entertainment release on DVD.
That's a good one to have. What about you, Andrew? You've seen it, I assume?
I actually have not.
Really?
Wow! Oh, yeah, man. We need to introduce him stat.
You see, the thing about that movie is, like, that was the best thing related to Lupin the Third to ever come out. Up until the recent series, Lupin the Third Season 4, where they're all in Italy. That now, in my opinion, is the best thing related to Lupin the Third.
Yeah, I still think Castle Cagliostro is the best thing, but there are a lot of different other adventures too. And it was kind of funny, the way I got introduced to Castle of Cagliostro, I missed it with its initial release, but then I played this game called Cliffhanger, which was like this Dragon's Lair wannabe game that featured footage from a different Lupin movie and Castle Cagliostro. And I was like, you know, this is fun to watch, but I want to see what the original source material is. And then I found a copy on like VHS, and I fell in love with it. It was so good.
And I believe the movie, the other one that it took the footage from was Mystery of Mamo, which I
have a blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is more comedic than the Castle Cagliostro one.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, what about you? What's an anime that makes you relax?
Most definitely Osmangadayo.
Nice.
That's just like a freaking classic.
Yes.
As funny as it is, I've watched it like way back, you know, and I've seen it forever. That was one of the first animes that I was introduced to when I was first getting introduced to the anime world. So it kind of holds that like special place in my heart, but it definitely has that like, oh, this is nice, you know. I really love that anime. It helps me chill out and do whatever. I'm sure I have a whole bunch of animes on my shelf, but that's really the one that pops up in the forefront of my mind, other than Flying Witch.
Yep. And right now for me, because there's another show that I've been watching or catching up on called Non Non Biori, which we just mentioned while playing song from.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Non Non Biori is, all right, so it's such a small village, so all these students from the 1st, 5th, 8th and like 7th grade all are in one classroom together because there aren't that many kids to fill up one class, let alone an entire school. But what I like about the show is it's just the mentality that the characters have. They're cute, they're sweet, they're real, and it's also the way that the countryside has been portrayed in this show. It's just such a very relaxing sort of show to watch while enjoying some really good laughs. I've become such a big fan of Non Non Biori that just recently I ordered an Android of one of the characters from the show. And odds are I'm probably going to plan to buy the series on Blu-ray in the near future.
Nice.
But like, what I like about Non Non Biori is it makes me go, I wish I could live in the Japanese countryside, because it just so looks so relaxing and peaceful. Key phrase is Japanese countryside, because as Andrew might attest, the countryside here in America, if you've ever been up to New Hampshire, there's a difference between being relaxed and being bored. And New Hampshire countryside is boring, but the Japanese countryside, it just looks so relaxing, and it looks like there's just so much to explore there.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. I'm making notes as we do this. Mm-hmm. I'm writing out everything I'm writing. Have you guys heard of a series called Magical Shopping Arcade of Benabashi?
Yes,
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
It's really good. I mean, it's a little frantic at times, but this is another one of those animes where you can just kick back and chill and just watch everything go nuts.
A lot of people like to say it's the unofficial sequel to Fooly Cooly before the second and third seasons of the
show
were officially announced. Because I believe it's the same cast and crew that made it. I know it was Gainax. And I think, because a lot of the ideas from Fooly Cooly kind of spilt into Abenobashi.
Indeed.
Yep.
One other show that came to mind when I was thinking of a relaxing show, and I don't know if it's been licensed here in America yet. I had watched it many years ago when I used to do the download fan subs, back when downloading fan subs was kind of frowned upon. Well, it's still frowned upon, but it wasn't as frowned upon as it is now, since you can get anime almost anywhere you go these days. But it was a show called Record. And it was following this girl who was a newcomer in the voice acting realm. And it was her working her way up the ladder. And her dream was to become the Japanese dubbing voice for Audrey Hepburn for her movies. And it was just such a nice, calm, relaxing, and carefree show that I could totally understand why it may not have hit anyone's radar. But at the same time, it's definitely something to look into if you're interested in voice acting. See how high the ladder is you have to climb in order to reach the top peak of it. but also just for the character development too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the best kind of anime, I think, one in which, you know, doesn't force character development on you. I mean, I've seen so many things where characters have like a forced way of coming across and everything like that, and it's really hard to cheer them on, you know what I mean? And I've seen it in games too. It's just a matter of, you want to have that right groove in terms of getting used to a character, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And because I'll tell you, I keep having to bring this up, but one of the biggest problems with Homefront the Revolution is that, no, I'm sorry to keep bringing it up. I know we were talking about Doom and all that stuff, but one problem I have with this game is the resistance you're fighting for are a bunch of dicks. I mean, you're basically walking to their camp, you get the shit beat out of you by two guys. You're sitting in a chair, tied up, and this girl comes over and threatens to cut off your nipples unless you spill all your secrets about being a spy. Then the main leader comes in and recognizes you, gives you a quick apology, and denies giving you any pills because it can make you groggy. I'm like, fuck you. Your guys just beat the shit out of me. You give me all the medicine you have. I'm not working for you, dicks. I'll just go back to my daily life. Thank you. It pissed me off because when you have something that's forced development like that and forces you to go along with it, you never really feel a connection to the characters.
Oh, absolutely.
And right. I've seen some anime shows with a fair share of this. I mean, I hate to bring a video game up for comparison, but it's just an example of how storytelling could go the wrong way and never make empathize with a character. You know what I mean?
Story writing is story writing.
Right.
You know.
One anime that I want to bring up before we conclude this segment that is, I feel like, the epitome of great character development is an anime that's finally going to be getting released on Blu-ray this summer, and I think Andrew will agree with me on this one, Barakamon.
Yes, finally.
I heard about this one.
Oh my god.
Barakamon has
some
of the best character development and realism in an anime I've seen in like recent memory. And and I think you brought this up, Andrew, when you said that every time when an episode of Barakamon ended, you felt sad because you had to leave the island.
Yeah, and you know, It's true. Like, it was just so nice. Like, every episode was just such a nice treat and, like, a nice adventure into, like, just a really nice world that has kind of been melded and built and written, and it was so cool. One of the things that's really refreshing about the show, too, that gave it a really nice touch was that the child actors are actually voice acted by children.
Yeah. Instead of, like, 20-year-olds trying to act like children.
Yeah,
absolutely. But that feeling that you had with leaving the island, Andrew, of Barakamon, is the feeling that I get when an episode of Flying Witch ends. Like, I feel sad now that they have to leave Aomori at the end of the episode. So yes, these are some good recommendations I think that we've all given, and for our listeners, I would highly recommend you check them all out. We mentioned Flying Witch, of course, which is now on Crunchyroll and Anime Network. Millennium Actress, which is now streaming for free on YouTube. We mentioned Nonon Biori, also on Crunchyroll and on Hulu and the Anime Network. Azumanga Daioh, Barakamon. Am I missing any that we talked about?
Castle Cagliostro.
Yeah, Castle Cagliostro.
I'm going to recommend that. I mean, that's, like I said, one of my all-time favorites, so, yep.
Yeah, all right.
It's a good recommendation.
Those are some good recommendations. So right now, we're going to take another break, but we're going to spin the closing theme from Flying Witch. Flying Witch? I hate when that little speech impediment just comes out of nowhere. Like, I don't have a speech impediment, but sometimes your mouth just decides to move weirdly. Exactly.
Remix.
Yeah. Anyways, these are the voice actresses for Makoto Shinatsu, Minami Shinoda, and Anu Suzuki, with a song about the magic of everyday life. And oddly enough, that's kind of the title of the song in Japanese. It's called Nichijo no Mamo.
They never leave the comfort zone. What? Aha! They seem not to care, so try to steer clear. As the legend goes of the mystery house, the old man in his basement chained, a monster in a cabinet, a creature of habit, incredibly inevitable, incredibly strange. Like a parade for the odd that moved to town, the people started losing track of important things they'd known. And folks around here lost the will to get things done at all. Ask someone what went wrong, they'll say it's not their fault. So when you're feeling right, you know, not just a little, but more. You realize you're all messed up, but don't feel bad. A voice in your head says it's not your fault. The thing that climbs into your head at night, the thing and greedy eyes, the thing that helps you escape your mistake, the thing, the something else that you can blame, the thing in the basement. People, but when it hit, no one cried or screamed. They all went about the business, getting back to the front of the TV screen. Now the thing, he's part of you, he'll keep your pride alive. And who are they to accuse you? I guess they think that thing's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. So when you're feeling mighty low, not just a little, but a lot, you realize you're on the stuff, but don't feel bad. A voice in your head says it's not your fault. The thing that climbs into your head at night, the thing, the selfish chief and greedy eyes, helps you escape your mistakes, the thing, the something else that you can blame. Look, Billy, I think I see some more. Is that
traveling in pigs?
Yeah, quick, hand me the flashlight.
That was the Aquabats with The Thing on the Bass Amp. I haven't heard that song in, I don't know, forever. And I am still Andrew Fleming, and I'm actually here on Evan's show, No Borders, No Race. And we're still here with Evan, King Baby Duck Evan and Robert.
Yes.
Yes.
Now,
still here.
Yes, we are still here. And that is from The Floating Eye of Death versus The Floating Eye of Death specifically. And I think I speak for everyone when we say we need a third season of the Aquabat Super Show.
Oh, man. Versus The Floating Eye of Death was one of my favorite albums by them. Now I always get confused as well. Is it the versus The Floating Eye of Death or Myst Legends and Other Adventures that is the B-Sides album?
That is the B-Sides album.
Which one?
The Myths and Other Legends.
Okay, because I always get confused because Wild Sea sounds more like a real song than Chemical Bomb. And because Chemical Bomb seems like such a weird song for the Aquabats to sing, but like that is like the real release. And then Wild Sea is like the you know, they use the same tune, but I don't know. It's always been like, woo.
All right, yeah. So before we go, we actually have some poll results for both Doom and Flying Witch. So, on Twitter, I asked people what they thought about Doom. So, the results are in. 67% of people loved Doom, the new one. 33% haven't played it yet, so that makes up the 100%. No one voted that they hated it or they just thought it was okay. You either loved That's it good. Or you haven't played it yet.
Perfect.
Yep.
And then on Anime Amino, I had the poll on Flying Witch, the best character in the show. And surprisingly, everybody voted unanimously for Makoto, the main character, as the best character.
Really?
Which apparently no one got the memo that Akane is best girl.
I will absolutely agree with that. Akane is best girl. Like, that is for sure.
Yeah. Potential of being best girl in 2016 in anime world.
Probably, I will probably vote for the same thing. I do like my dark skin anime girls. Just saying.
All right, DCD, Andrew, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race this week. Before we go, why don't you guys do your little promo magic? And DCD, why don't you go first?
Well, first off, before we do anything else, I do want to give a shout out. This week, we lost Alan Young, who died at the age of 96. In case you guys don't know, he was on Mr. Ed for several years, but he was most known for being the voice of Scrooge McDuck on the DuckTales.
Yes, yes.
He lived till 96, so that is a full life. So,
absolutely.
Alan, rest in peace. Thank you for the entertainment and everything like that. As far as where you can find me, I'm at twitter.com/theDCD. You can also find me on Facebook. You can find my work at maroonersrock.com. That's where my full reviews of Doom and Homefront are. You can also find me at A-List Daily, Prima Games, and OpsHead.com, which is a cool Call of Duty site. You can find me on Facebook, and we do our own podcast. We do the ARG podcast, which is another retro game podcast, me and David Gilton, and we do it every week. Episodes go up every Friday. We just talked to Tim Hartman, who worked on Haunted Halloween 85 for the NES, a brand new NES game, so be sure to give that a listen. And thank you guys so much for having me on the show. It's always a blast to talk anime with you, and always a blast to hear Evan screw up his lines. I'm sure he'll do some more E3. He'll go up to E3, so tell me about that game. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I know Evan's going to E3, but not Rochelle.
I know, Ninja's not going. But listen, it's going to be me, it's going to be Hamster Man, and it's going to be Bjork. Three-person team. We're still going to have fun.
It's going to be a blast. We'll get together for drinks.
Yes, we'll get together for drinks. And, you know, one of these days, Andrew and Jonathan have to get to E3 as well. I think the two of you would have a blast at E3.
Oh, man, I would love to. Yeah.
Poke at Nerdy Show a little bit to get you there.
Well, yeah, see, Nerdy Show doesn't even know if they're going anymore, so...
Really?
Yeah, Cap so we don't know.
Damn. Huh?
Cap isn't going to go?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think Cap's going to go. I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, well. All right. Andrew, do your little promo stuff, I guess.
All right.
You're not worth anything anymore.
And hey, if you guys want to join the discussion over on our show, you can email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com. That's wickedanimereviews, all one word, @gmail.com. You can also find us at facebook.com/wickedanime, where you can shoot us some messages, read some cool news articles we see from over the internet, or generally anything that we think is funny over the internet. You can find us at nerdyshow.com/wickedanime, where both our videos and our podcast can be found if you don't listen to our podcast on SoundCloud-wickedanime. And let's see, iTunes especially important, and actually almost anywhere you can listen to podcasts. Can't believe we're actually on Google Play right now as well. That's crazy. You can find us at youtube.com/wickedanimereviews, where we frequently post, or semi-frequently I should say, post videos. We're still working on all of our anime Boston updates, so hopefully soon we'll get the full con coverage out so you guys can check that out. And you can find us on all social meets. You can find us at Twitter, and you can tweet at us at @YoWickedAnime. And you can find us at Tumblr, where we tumble things at wickedanime.tumblr.com. And hey, if you want to see us play video games from time to time, check out and give us a follow at Twitch, where you can watch us on Twitch at WickedAnaPlay.
Excellent. And we got to drag DCD into an episode of Wicked Anime sometime. I think you would have a blast with all of the crew over there.
Oh, heck yeah.
Just let me know, sure.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. And I guess it's now my turn to do my usual promo stuff. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Master Brigade, you can find us at www.me3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Selma Sensei for her Nuzo Nyongo segment, you can write to us at thebastards@boston-brigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com. on AnimeAmino at KingBabyDuckESH, on Twitter at King_Baby_Duck, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/OmMysteryInc. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston-Brigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Ash. And of course, don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Ash, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smash Rook, Nerd Crave, and the Structure Network. Now, before we go, for this episode, I have been testing out a brand new headset from HyperX over at Kingston, the Cloud Revolver. It's a very comfortable headset, but I'm curious for the DCD and Andrew, testing out the mic, how am I coming in? Am I coming in good? Does it sound all right to you?
Yep, now you just need to learn how to speak English.
Oh, boy, with that... nightmares reliving of being in speech therapy back in middle elementary.
Speech therapy.
Yeah, I was in speech therapy for many years. Absolute fact for you listeners out there. But yeah, very comfortable. You'll be reading a review of this headset very shortly. I hope maybe in the next week or so. But
shortly.
But I like the guys over at HyperX. They're a good bunch of people there.
You know what? I want to actually recommend a headset while I'm at it as well. The team over there at Lucid Sound has a great new quality headset. Actually, Alex Berry, used to work at Mad Cats, handles their PR now. And they have this awesome headset that's amazing quality and everything like that. And it's only $150, but it's like some of the best surround sound quality I've heard in a headset. Plus, it's comfortable as hell. It almost feels as comfortable as a Beats headset. It's that well built. So check them out as well. It's twitter.com/lucidsoundaudio. And I said set up right.
All right. Well, Andrew, is there something that you yourself would like to promote? One shameless plug to go out for our listeners.
Robert Workman Rocks.
I really like food, and a good restaurant is Friendly's if you're in the northern area. So if you like, does that work? Is that good?
How'd that I work, do? DCD?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
All right, so we're going to end today's show with a new song from Special Thanks, who just released a new EP entitled Heavenly. This song is called Donaruno. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo.
Andrew from Wicked Anime.
The DCD from The Barb.
Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard.
But
it sure helps.
Sure helps.
Almost. We'll be right back.
Jazz. This is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.